Leonard Susan. And then Lauren Nividomski, I always say it wrong, but she is the executive director at Lantern House in Aachen. All three of them joined us, and then we currently have two additional people with applications in to fill vacancies of some of our board members who have moved on or who are moving on, so they can keep us rolling with the full board. Also, in normal fashion, our October meeting flip-flops based on the fall One Utah Summit, so we'll move the October meeting up. You should have already seen that on your calendars. It's been pushed up a week to October 3rd to accommodate the summit for those of you that go down and participate in that. And if you don't, I highly recommend it. It's really a great opportunity. Plus, it's in Cedar, and Cedar's awesome. I'm a little biased, but that's okay. Any other announcements? Oh, yes, this is a very big one. Dan Walker from Clyde Companies, who's been serving as our co-chair for operations with Gary Harder, decided to move up his retirement quite quickly and retired without telling me, which I think is really rude. But that's okay. I'll get more to talk about it later. But we're excited for Dan. And he, in true VP of HR fashion, found a succession plan for him on the board. And we're hopeful that Michelle Hill will be joining us. Her application's in with the governor's office right now. But I'm going to forgive Dan because he did find a potential replacement for himself, which is exactly what HR people should do. So I'll let him get by us that. And you can give him a hard time for it. So Dan did retire. We're grateful for his service. He only was with us for a few years, but was very ingrained in doing a lot of things. He went to a lot of recertifications for one-stops and was participating a lot on the operations committee, so he will be missed. And then Danielle, Danielle is filling in for us. She serves on the Career Pathways Committee, but she's with Adult Education and stepping in for Stephanie today, so we're really glad to have her. And then, is Dave here? I didn't see him. So Dave Busk, I think I announced at the last meeting, was moving on to a new career role, and then we swept in and pulled him back in part-time. And he's not with us today, but he is going to serve. He's now serving as the Chief of Veteran Services for the department. And then Amy, do you want to explain? Amy is replacing Dave, actually, as the Central and Southwest Area Director. So I'm grateful to have her on board with us. I know of Amy. She probably doesn't know that I know of her as much as I do. But she, outside of working with the Department of Workforce Services, I know she also serves in a variety of capacities in the community, so it's great to have her with us. Also from Cedar. Very cool. And then I don't have a quorum still.
Closer.
How much closer?
We need two more.
Two more people. We will not approve the minutes, but everyone should look at them and review them so they're ready to approve them when it's time. And John is really hot back there, and so is Sean, and so am I. I'm like, we're all like, it's 100 degrees outside, and it feels like it's getting warmer in here. Okay. Last thing before I turn it over to our committee chairs, our service project. So we do that every October, if you'll recall. We generally get in this room and assemble something of service. This year we're going to do it a little bit differently. We are going to partner with the actual Department of Workforce Services Division and do a combined service project based on talking to the executive committee and visiting with a few of you. Whatever we can do to help alleviate some of the stress and strains, especially on some of our populations that do have barriers, and one of those is affordable groceries and just food right now. And so, four, one closer. I'm only one more. So glad. We're getting so close to being able to do some actions this meeting. So, for service project, what we'll be doing, we're going to do a food drive for about 2 weeks. It'll likely happen in September. We'll get information out to you. But what we're going to do is each of the Department of Workforce Services service offices will also be doing a food drive, so the employees will participate with the board. And then we're asking board members, when we get the information out to you, to participate in that food drive. You can do it individually if you'd like, or if you would like to get your organizations involved and piggyback on it, then we'll just take that food over to whatever Department of Workforce Services office is closest to you. And drop off the food and let them know that you're a board member. And then we'll figure out how many pounds of food we were able to gather in those 2 weeks. And then we'll also split out the board member contribution. And that would be anything that's coming from any of your organizations as well. If they're providing, for instance, if my organization participates and we do a food drive and take it over, we'll track how many pounds of food come in from the board. In addition to the Workforce Services Division, and then we'll report on that. What we'll also do is so that we can spread the wealth out, DWS has identified different food pantries in different areas, so we'll make sure we spread that out and get those to various locations that need it. So any questions tonight? You okay on that?
Go ahead. And does that have to be food, or can you do money and have somebody else go get maybe what's left out of it?
Excellent question. And I can tell you the food pantry in Cedar has a way to get money if people don't want to do food. So I don't know how that's going to fly. You know, I have no idea, or you're saying no, we can't. Doesn't know yet. We're going to try. But I have known some of the centers will bring it in. So that's a really good question. We'll find out if we can. We're also going to find out specifically what types of food that you really are in need of so that you can maybe target that as well. So, I mean, ramen is great, but it's not super nutritious. So if we could provide, you know, canned meat and peanut butter, that is a little better than raw. But I think they'll take it. That was a very good question. We'll find out if monetary donations can be made. I love it. Anything else? Okay, that will be our October service project. And hopefully we'll be able to report on it on October, but it might have to be January before we can report on it, depending on when we can kick it off. Okay. If we aren't reporting on October 3rd, I'll probably be reminding you to donate food. Okay. Committee of charters is our next thing. And that's going to go over to, are we just telling them we approved them? Oh, got it. Okay. So, during the executive meeting, I'm deciding what to, if I want to do my plug now or not. I'll do it at the end. Okay. So during our executive meeting, each of the five committees have reviewed their charters with their committees in their different committee meetings over the last quarter and made some changes. And we reviewed those as an executive committee today and voted on those. We voted to approve them all on a high level for the most part operations. These are reviewed every 4 years as part of the requirements for our plan. That we have to redo every 4 years, and we have to sign off on these. So the operations charter, pretty much not a lot changing on that one. The career pathways changed quite a bit in their goals, but that's because of the direction of Jen Saunders and James Jackson, who are leading that committee. We've really reached out to our committee to get an idea and be a little more actionable. I say we because I'm a committee, to be a little more intentional and actionable on what we're doing with career pathways and to unify language of what we mean with career pathways. And so the committee did create some new goals around that on their charter. The apprenticeship committee pretty much stayed almost, it's like exactly the same except for a little changing of the guard. As we announced at the last meeting, Scott is the new apprenticeship commissioner. So there's just been some changes in that regard. Youth committee, a little bit of changes there. They have a new goal that they're working on their charter. And then moved some of the other goals back because they felt like this main goal on youth resources was what they wanted to focus on. And then the last one is service to individuals with disabilities. That one probably had the most changes, mostly because if you'll recall, the Services to Individuals with Disabilities Committee was actually a governor's committee. And because of some new legislation, that committee has moved out of the governor's office and put back with the board. We as a board and with WIOA are required to have that committee. So we just took that committee and relocated it to officially be on the board rather than just liaise with the governor's office. So that was the biggest change there. Any questions about this? These were approved, but they should be. But I'm also just going to put a plug in. As a board member, especially around this table, because I know the ones that attend, but for those of you that are sitting around the table, if you are not on a board or on a committee, one of these five committees, please reach out to me so we can get you assigned. If you are on a committee, please do your very best to make sure that you are hopping on those calls and providing support to your committee chairs and co-chairs. Questions about charters or committees? All right, I've been talking so much. Is it? What? Oh, we do? Okay, cool. I need a motion to approve the minutes from the October meeting. Thank you, Tim. I need a second. Thank you, Mike. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. That's the easiest one. Very good. Okay. I'm following this new agendas. We are going to Yeah, I think so. While we have a quorum, we're going to move things around a little bit. I think I have the progress to do that. Is that okay to do a public meeting, or do we have to do a motion to change to each other?
Probably we should officially do that.
Okay. I need a motion to move up the committee report out to right after the one-stop recertification. So we're official on Robert's rules. Thank you.
Second.
Thank you, Matt, because it's the reason we have to do it. Hello.
You don't want to make the motion, so obviously. That'd be too obvious.
Any discussion on moving an agenda item up to accommodate past busy schedules?
Sorry, guys.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Sorry, Matt. It was just too easy. That was low-hanging fruit. I had to teach you. Okay. Lindsay, do you want me to say anything about...
I can do.
Yeah, I'm going to have Lindsay talk really quick about a couple of MOUs that we have to do for WIOA. I give her a hard time on the acronyms. I thought IFA stood for Intermountain Farm Association. It doesn't. In this case, it stands for Infrastructure Agreement.
Yeah, you got it.
So I'm going to let her talk for a second.
I mean, we've talked about this in board meetings before, but it was a part of the WIOA law that we have two MOUs to provide the services that we do. The first MOU is between the board and the Department of Workforce Services. This is the board giving Department of Workforce Services permission to be the one-stop operator. So the ones that provide the employment centers, the American Job Centers, and do all the certifications that you guys participate in. So that's just between the board and the Department of Workforce Services, and that one has been fully executed. So that's a good one. We're done with that. And then the other MOU is a partner MOU. So this is between all of the core and required partners as part of WIOA, which includes State Board of Education, Utah System Education, Job Corps, Build, our senior employment programs, government programs, and just our agreement that we will partner together and how we will work together to meet the employment needs of Utahns. It also includes how we will support each other and cost share some of the cost of doing business as well. So it has about 12 different agencies that sign on the 10 to 12. And so it takes a while for it to go through all of those agencies. So it's in process right now. But we are just operating kind of in executed. So we're excited to help.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Necessary things in order to operate.
Yep.
Okay, next, my favorite part. We had two recertifications of one-stop centers since last April. We have Logan and Cedar City. For those that were in Logan, I think that Lauren was in Logan. I don't know if Lauren's online with us. You know, she is. So Lauren was in Logan. Bruce was in Logan. And who else? The two. Awesome. So good. So we had a very seasoned veteran board member in Logan with Bruce. Bruce has been serving before I was on the board. So Bruce has been with us for a really long time. And then Lauren is brand new. She just started in April. So we'll just give them a little bit of time to speak on that. Lauren, we can see you. If you want to just kind of maybe give us a little summary of what your experience was, that would be great.
Yeah, awesome. Can you all hear me okay? Perfect. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be involved in this research. It was really exciting. I was telling my coworker, it's interesting in the workforce that I come from to go in depth to a center like this and really engage. And I wanted to participate in an agency that was close, but still not like in my backyard here up at North. So it was a great opportunity. I learned so much. I was lucky to partner with Bruce to really help guide me through a lot of things and move forward. But overall, that little Logan One Stop Center is amazing. They do so much work. They've been heavily influenced by the pandemic and have made proper adjustments. And it was just really enlightening to sit down and watch them talk through their processes and then go out and watch the practices happening on the floor. And so I know Bruce has more technical like ins and outs that happen, so I'll turn it over to him. But it was an amazing opportunity. I learned so much, and it's really something that I'd like to do more of because it is extremely interesting.
Thank you, Lauren. You know, Lauren was great to work with. A lot of the years we heard that our children wanted to pledge to be with her. The facility that we mentioned there in Logan was very good. It was clean. It looked organized. It looked professional. We put there several different roles of just hearing how they listened and then actually participating in a multitude of different scenarios, different situations. And they made us feel like that was very comfortable. You could tell, and it was a busy day. They had a lot of people that they were working with. So for us to stand in line and be somebody that they had to deal with was kind of a challenge at times, but they handled it very well. They came to us and let us know what we were going to do about the handbook. And my, for example, one of the role plays that we had, I was going to be a gentleman that didn't have any computer expertise. Not wanting to do anything on the computer, but that's kind of a difficult thing in today's world because everything's online. All we get to fill out, they sat me down, bring the forms, they helped me with the process. I know Lauren felt the same way. They were accommodating. We understood the process, concerned about our needs, and we presented a pretty difficult situation where not even prepared to handle. Felt like they were respected and they're prepared and enjoyed the process. And I think that they should be recognized. Nothing more than I've been adding there. Appreciate the honor being with me. And it's fun to be. Had some good help with all staff over there helping us. It was fun. It was a good experience.
Is that your official,
I hereby request that we approve the certification of the Bullock office and express our optimism and appreciation for the great
news. That's so good. Thank you. Okay, that was good. Second, I need a second for that. Hey, thanks, Sean. Any discussion? Good job, Helen.
Lauren.
And Lauren, good job. Thanks for being there. Helen, your team, congratulations. And
thank you for the support.
Awesome. Good job, Logan. I have been to Logan's research site for the initial one. So the next one is Cedar Woodstock. We did that just a couple weeks ago. It was myself and Matt Liu and Kendall Thomas, also one of our brand new learners, who all went out to do this. And we had a great experience too. Matt, is there anything you want to say?
Just pass off to Kim and her team. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've never been a part of this, be a part of it. It is fun. I mean, it's several hours, but if I tackle my school, and it's just fun, you know, being part of that, fun seeing the help that's being given to the community. I think really at the end of the day, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, what can we do to promote more of the services in these various centers? Because, I mean, I was surprised at more of a call, you know, what's available. So I think, you know, as we regrouped and as we talked among ourselves at the end, I think that was one of the things that, you know, that kind of talked about how can we tell everyone about the good news of those very impressive. Cedar kind of didn't luck out and have the experience. Like our good friend here that took our piece, show up and try to be a part of this thing. But again, grateful for me, grateful for Kim and Steph and Boyd for walking us through it. But amazing center, very well run, very organized, a great staff, great interaction. Again, meeting you all.
It's top notch. We couldn't use our staff. It was so busy there. We just actually sat back and watched. We couldn't do our role play as well because I think Patty was like one. And then we just actually sat back and watched because they had so many people in and out of there. There's two things I wanted to bring up that I mentioned during, this was probably my, sixth or seventh month doing these, but when we started doing this, when the Riola changed, there were two things that kept coming up when we were doing the original, certification before we did the research. One was trying our very best to co-locate, which I know not necessarily from a real estate standpoint in all of the centers, but I do think that a lot of centers have tried to co-locate, and the co-location in Cedar was very noticeable, and it was just, and you could see them interacting. There was so much traffic in Cedar. The co-partners had come out and kind of almost help a little bit because everyone was busy, and so just seeing the camaraderie and the co-location of the partners was very obvious. That was one. The other element that we noticed when we started doing certifications years ago was just being flexible, but balanced in providing services on hours. So we really started diving into these. Kind of that 9 to 5, it's a hard kind of thing. And you could just tell some of their answers, some of their outreach to the community, that there was a concerted effort to try and find a way to help provide support to the community and maybe not the normal traditional business hours. And so being able to go to Cedars and see that was really cool. Because I just remember in my first couple of over two, 10 things that we recommended was trying to find a way do the best to co-locate if possible, and the other one was to find a charter member. So, bringing up that, having that work-life balance, but still being able to recognize community needs. So, I just wanted to mention those. Also, we had such a great time, Matt and I, that we are the executive on Metro 1 million.
Sure,
we all, the three of us want to go to Metro, because we feel like it probably will be a little bit of a difference for you people down here. And so we just want to see so if it's okay, that will be a motion.
That we can all these.
Okay. Thank you very much. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay. All right. Great job. We have Clearfield, South County, and Metro coming up, correct? Before the end of the year. So plenty of opportunities to jump on one of those. As long as things work out. If you want an opportunity for that, I should make with Natalie or Kim so that you can participate because it really is an experience. With that, we're going to move into committee reports. We'll have Scott jump in with friendships if that's okay, and then we'll have Matt go into you. For those of you that are just getting online and looking at your agenda, we moved the committee report out up ahead of healthcare workforce advisory council, just for some tiny logistics. Go ahead, Scott.
Membership committee currently does not have a chance to do the report.
Working on that. Oh, sir.
Protocols. Fine, it's not really good for that. Since this board met, there actually has been quite a bit of activity specifically focused around youth protection. And so in May, we actually had a National Youth Apprenticeship Week, which was the and there were several events organized across the state by Pat Miller and Department of Labor, and also supported by our apprenticeship navigators, have engaged with employers, with educators, and the offices of students, just telling us about the opportunities that there are ways to get new programs rolled out. There were a lot of graduations that took place in that same time. Actually, most school districts had their testing part of the leader told us that we're going to make that to a more suitable next team. But we did have a lot of really great success in solving community college at the job court facility, the court, and then both with SGU and the career and technical high school in Southern Utah. They all participated. There's also been some legislative action that took place this year in HB 555 and SB 142. Both have some relationship with partnerships. So what that's really done, it's got a lot of extra eyes and attention on that from the educators and from the employers. Whether in high school, whether it's 16 to 24 is what that term of draft is. And so we've been participating with Calendar of Utah and Rochelle Ackley as their working on the state study, these membership states that have taken place as part of SB 142. That group is kind of meant to build out a state system for the apprenticeship. We're all kind of swimming in the same direction, and then identify some gaps, make some policy recommendations to the state legislature. And that's going really, really well, and had a lot of great participation from the state board of education, UCH, and then also. I think we've also been trying to reach out to it's work-based learning design for at the same education that are placed across the state. There's been several opportunities for finding myself to be able to present and reach each of these different answers. They are for specific technical education programs. Get them familiar with kind of show them moves on how to connect with better employers so we can start rolling these programs out statewide. I'll give you some of the stats from the Department of Labor as well for where we're sitting.
Scott, what can you talk as loud as possible?
Some of the stats of where we're sitting with apprenticeship right now for the Trump Department of Labor is currently have 284 registered apprenticeship programs. 15 of those come this year, just in the first half of this year. So it's growing very, very quickly. We've got 4,681 current apprentices. That's the most we've ever had in the state. And I think 1,400 of those have happened just in the first half of this year. So we're well on track to finish this year with the most we've ever had currently going through the program. So we're very, very pleased with the attention that they're getting here and facilitating, the use of this new but also it's a non-provisional sector. And so that's kind of the big summary of what we've worked on in the past 3 months. But the next big event that we have is in November. And so the Apprenticeship Summit happens every year in November. This year we've just been informed that it's going to be occurring. So November 17th through the 23rd is when we'll have a Utah Apprenticeship Summit. Still kind of nail down a location. We're kind of tentative date of the 19th, which would be a Tuesday for the summit. We'll have some further information before the next board meeting. So, but you can see the date down on the calendar. We love that. We'll actually participate
every year. November 19th?
Yeah, that's so long.
Can you give us like one or two of the new 15 apprenticeships? Like, give us a couple of pathways. What are those?
Yeah, sure. So, one now we're going to do is REM Aviation.
Okay.
And so, it's an advanced manufacturing company that's now starting with new apprenticeships.
RAM is doing them.
Yes, they are. And they're also bringing on adult learners as well. And so, they're going to have to expand with that apprenticeship website, but we did get the direction to do this next month, and they are off to race. We are also working with Healthcare and IH is now bringing on some places, not for registered nurses, but for biomed technicians and that sort of thing. They brought on, I think it was 18 medicines, starting with IH, which is really great because we kind of consider them a bigger company in the field, obviously, and they're looking to find other avenues to also include references for their
time. I'm
just curious, is that a license of kind of shifts, training for that?
Yeah, so this is actually the Lumen Smart Telephone Program with all the registered programs. So this would be a lot of traditional reps, like plumbing, technical, consulting, building on top of that bridge. But there's also some more beneficial ones there as well.
Yes, exactly. So the comparison of the traditional
ones. Okay, the lion's share is definitely the more traditional ones. I'd say probably about 60% would be wrapped up in that, but about 40% is. Other ones, finance, healthcare, I think pastry chef and dog trainer are also originally programs that we have. So there is a point of the conversation.
Okay,
Jeff,
other questions for Scott? All right. Matt Lou, in your loudest voice, loudest construction form of voice, tell us what's going on with you.
Appreciate that. First of all, appreciate support staff. They're amazing and they've helped me kind of navigate through the responsibility that we have in the youth league. I think a couple of different things that we are working on is, we're working with an alternative school, part of the Washington County School District. I'm a member of the council there. This school is for students 7 to 12. That maybe doesn't quite, it's not real comfortable in the traditional educational system. So they're in this school, they're in St. George. There's about 160 to 180 students. Almost 90% graduate, which is kind of impressive. But seeing that sometimes because of where they are, they're not involved in some of the other opportunities, resources that some of the traditional schools are involved with in the county. So we're working on establishing like workshops with schools here to kind of help that student base with some career ideas, some career path ideas, and just some options moving after they get their diploma or their GED. I think part of what we'd like to do is work closely with apprentice community and as well as with faculties, because I think there's a lot of crossovers and I think there's some great opportunities. And for me personally, I don't know much about both communities, but I feel that there is some amazing opportunities there. And I would love to recommend once we do have a chair set aside, I know we as committee, you know, meet like once I'd like to suggest maybe as committee chairs that we have a side meeting. The bus wants to put that meeting.
Totally just, legal.
So that we can interact and know what's going on with each other's efforts, so that if there's an overlay or some help, or some leverage we can get, I do want to not create a loop. And I think sometimes, even with senior, you know, I have no idea. I think a lot of times what we do in our own little areas, sometimes others don't. And I think if we collaborate and talk through things, I think we can probably, you know, expand what our responsibility is as well as working together as a group. So
let's focus on that third second council and then
October.
And I'll tee it up so we're ready for
that. Okay. And then the last part is we talked about different things that we're working on, trying to board out. Obviously, we've talked about videos, and that's also been the talk or the discussion of the goal of the previous leadership of this committee. We do have some ideas that we want to bring forward, hopefully in October. So that might be a little bit more 2024, than 2020, as far as concept and ideas on how to get to our client base and get them interested in having an opportunity to see what's out there. See what's out in the career, see what's out in the marketplace, see what we kind of creeping interest in their minds beyond, you know, screens and other things that they tend to take their time. So that's kind of our hope.
Awesome. Questions for you? That's doing great. He stepped in to something that he was voluntold and asked. I mean,
he's definitely
doing great. I'm so grateful.
We are still, you know, portal still open. We can have transfers.
That is correct. Oh, I'm openly returning for you. Always.
Always.
That's correct.
Signing bonuses.
That's right.
Turn something out.
In the forms of water bottles. Okay. So, hey, Deanna, the loudest piano going to
I will try my best.
So the governor's committee facility to all the key awards, and I know some of you are not aware of what that is, but what it is that I think I'm involving that first of all, and is especially in all to educate people about employment with disabilities, and then the second part is where we have a first ceremony. And it honors employers for various classes and also individuals for this. It's a great event. But that's what October 1st. And then the committee is currently working on updating some of our bylaws. We have some changes with Megan mentioned earlier, so we're looking at some of the research.
There's a, I was just going to add, there's a flyer for the Golden Season Disability that Deanna was talking about. So it's in your packet.
There are a lot of flyers.
covered running on that number two. Right here, I have to see it covered up. I think that there is a little bit of a change to go on and register that. So, and I think that's fantastic. Some of the business relations team has been presenting to great companies and they've made a conversation. Those organizations are interested in. If you are an employer, please ask them to come out and reach out to me and get out of their company. Meet with people who are talking. They can help you out. And then they're also going on. They're not fully staffed on their tech support team. And let's see, if they're upcoming events, July 30th, you have this one. This is for the National Ability Center. It's a Lynchburg City. It's an amazing facility that can literally find us and really walk out the baby. July 30th, at 1:30, information session. And they're also doing
as far as who wants to put in the club, our priorities, and mainly it's just more action-oriented type priorities. Like how can we work with our youth, how we work with ourselves to build, help them develop their soft skills more, and how we help them utilize the resources within our center, as well as external resources, and really just kind of being a resource within the community to start being a facilitator on different programs. So that's basically what we've been working on, is, you know, kind of going into building out our charter, and that's kind of what we want to do within that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
have a pretty great committee also open in the portal. We'll have plenty of spots to them. That's one. Okay. Operation. Gary, we have two steering space. Did you got? And Dan decided to retire, so Dan's up, of course.
Dan and me. Actually, the operations committee is really seeing a lot of business and a lot of stuff that we can bring today, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but they oversee, like, both of the MOUs that were discussed, and then I want to mention again the VO plan was finally approved by Alberta. So the final version is on the web, on the page, so if you want to go look at that, you can. And then, of course, the operations committee oversees the American Job Center certification. So there's been three this year. There are three more coming up. We should have a date pretty soon. On the Deerfield one. And so we just want to know about that in August. And stuff coming in September. And then we're talking about Metro will be in November. So those are the kinds of things that
Okay. Awesome. Next thing on our agenda is Healthcare Workforce Advisory Council. Hello? Hi. The floor is yours. You have to speak loudly. Okay. Okay. Yes, just remind me if I'm not. Are you afraid to take it? You could get away. That's the new one. Keep on jumping closer to the owl. The owl is that thing. Yes. All right. Thank you all so much for having me here today. It's always an honor to present on the HR, but also be on the reverse side of a council meeting. So thank you so much for having me. My name is Kendall Rothman, and I am the lead staffer and policy analyst for the Utah Council. I will refer to it as the HR. Stumble through that. Okay, thank you very much. So you can refer to the HVAC, that is the home workforce advisory council. So to start, I wanted to do a little bit of background on the HVAC. It was established in the 2022 general session through House Bill 176. It was chaired by Executive Director of the HVAC, Tracy Gruber, who has 14 additional members, and two of them are actually here with us at the my work, which is exciting. The goal, so the additional 14 members, some of them are statutorily required to be there, and then others are full members going throughout the state, public and private sectors of the health industry. The charge of the HWAP is to study and provide recommendations on strengthening and expanding our health workforce here in Utah. As I'm sure you have all heard extensively in the last 4 years, there are health workforce shortages in Utah and across our nation. And so the HVAC was established to provide recommendations to strengthen it and have better access to healthcare for everyone. So we wanted to list out some of our, all of our statutory members here. So you can see our statutory members are across state agencies. We have the Department of Health and Human Services, where we're housed, the Department of Workforce Services, the System of Higher Education, the Department of Commerce, the Division of Multicultural Affairs, the Utah Substance Use and Mental Health Advisory Council, also known as USAID, if you've heard of that before, the Indian Health Advisory Board, as well as the Utah Medical Education, are all statutory agencies on our board. And then Tracy Gruber elected or appointed 6 additional members throughout the industry. These range from employers to professional agencies, as well as our education, just so that we have a full scope on the healthcare as it's all encompassing and not the traditional physicians and nurses. We wanted to make sure that we had everyone possible at the table without having an overwhelming number of board members. So to support some of the work of the HVAC, we have established subcommittees similar to you all. So I will go further into them a little bit. Just a moment, but we have our data subcommittee, which is chaired by Mark Steinemol. He's the division director of the Department of Professional Licensing. We have our legislative review subcommittee. We're very active during the legislative session, and that's chaired by Dr. Lisa
Garrett, a director at large of the Utah Nursing Association, and she is also with the university as well. And then finally, we have our Utah Medical Education Council, or UMEC. They've been around for quite a long time, so you might have heard of them before. They've been around since 1997, I believe, and were previously housed under the Utah System of Higher Education that have been under the HVAC episode. And that one is chaired by Dr. Stanford Winston, who is the interim dean of the University of Utah Spencer Fox Beckel School of Medicine at the University of Utah. And Dr. Finley Sinesh-Mayadonis also sits on our council. So all three of those sit on our council. Committee chairs, subcommittee chairs do have to make that. So we wanted to touch a little bit on our 2024 action plan. As we are still fairly new, we really needed a document to kind of guide our efforts, at least for this next year. And so we have three main activities that we're working on. The first is to enhance coordination. So it's going to be like this. Come and just present to other workforce boards or initiatives and also have them come and present to us, which has been very exciting because it allows us to identify areas for collaboration and kind of knock down some of those silos between us all, even though we're all wanting to do the best thing to have a strong workforce here in Utah. Next is our strengthening clinical training. It's a very specific topic that was determined by the HVAC. In Utah, there's been evidence, not just in Utah, but throughout the nation, there is evidence showing that if you can train providers here or in the state, they'll most likely end up back in the state. And this is especially true for rural areas and exposure to rural areas. So, in the next year, the HVAC is going to be, through our consultants, is going to be developing and running a full study nationwide and specific to Utah on our preceptor tip issue. So for those of you that haven't heard of preceptors, those are like mentors in a healthcare field. So doctors training other providers and vice versa. And so we will be doing a full study on that, and towards the end of that study, we'll be formulating recommendations to them that update legislature, which is And third is just fulfilling our statutory duties. As simple as the sound, it can be a little more complex just to make sure that we're hitting all of our statutory duties. For example, our legislative review process is statutorily required to review health workforce legislation. But we, every year that we've gone through it, we've been updating our process to make sure that it's the best that it can be, that we're putting up effective. In addition to those, we are working through data reports, which I'll touch on just a little bit later, and then just working and making sure that we're communicating with. So we wanted to touch a little bit on our data subcommittee, or each of the subcommittees, and I'll start with the data subcommittee. These are the members of our this data subcommittee, and for membership, we have asked any individual who's like volunteer that would like to sit on there. For this one, we have a mix between public members and HVAC members. And the goal of this is to provide a space or a forum for subject matter experts to come in and talk about data collection and the efforts and how those can be used to support health workforce efforts and initiatives throughout our state. The data subcommittee has supported the HVAC by creating and developing the Utah Cross Profession Minimum Data Set, or UCPMDX, as we like to call it. So this is something that's fairly new to Utah. It's a relicensure survey that's attached to relicensures for all health professionals. We don't have them all out. The way it kind of works is our analytics team kind of does the first development, then sends it on to our data subcommittee and subject matter experts for their final review, and then moves it on to the HVAC for final adoption. And so we're still working through most of our groups. We have about 7 or 8. But this data is We recognize that if we want to make any recommendations to the legislature, to government agencies, who is anyone, they need it to be data-driven. And although we have some data, there's some really great data, we just felt we needed more robust data. And this is something that a lot of states are already doing to collect this. Here in Utah, it's not required, so it is remaining optional. And it's through college checks right now. But we were very impressed by our response rate for this first group. Out of the system, that might have been updated a little bit since then. But we will use these data, and we will turn them into reports. They will each be profession specific. specific. So our first one will be physicians and surgeons, and then the next will be our ADRX. And in there, we're using this data to really identify gaps in shortages and where policy efforts can really lean in. That's not just regards to breeding more nurses, but educating more nurses and how do we retain that care. And so this is really exciting for us. These survey questions were created initially by 7 national organizations that we adopted, and we were the first to adopt that. To move on to the Utah Medical Education Council, I mentioned they have been around since 1997. This is kind of unique because they have been around and they are still a governor-appointed board. So although they are a subcommittee under the HWAC, all of those appointments have to go through the governor and his office, similarly to this one. And the role for them primarily is to conduct health board for research. A lot of it's related to physician and surgeons. And also influencing graduate medical education financial policies, so training for physicians here. The goal, as you can tell, most everybody on that board is a doctor, and so that's kind of their purview right now is physician to work with the HVAC and move forward. I know that wants to be of interest is broadening their scope just a little bit. I wanted to touch on just a few grant programs that we manage under QMEC, also HVAC. So these are all related to graduate medical education, so residency programs here in Utah. The top two programs were appropriated during the 2022 general session. The top one is the medical residency grant program, which creates or expands on the residency program in Utah. And the goal of this is to have more residents in Utah who are training here who ultimately end up working here. So by increasing the residency slots, we're doing that through increasing the number of programs. So for this last round, we have 4 new programs that are working to get accredited and established, and most of those focus on rural and family health, which is such a need here in Utah. So we're excited about that. Next, we have our Forensic Psychiatry Fellowship Grant Program. This is the first fellowship of its kind in Utah, which is really really exciting to get to kind of be a part of this. I don't know too much about forensic psychiatry, but the more that I learn, it's very exciting and a great service to have for the Department of Corrections. We will be contracting with the Department of Corrections about the services we have. And then lastly, the Utah Medical Education Council blocks 4 residency slots every year. So 2 of those residents sit at the University of Utah, one sits at Utah Valley Hospital, and the other sits at QD. So this is something that's been going on for since 2017, and it's solely just funding their salary for that 3-year program. So exciting to get involved in there. And then lastly, just to touch on our legislative review subcommittee. This subcommittee is very active during the legislative session, maybe weekly, which is pretty wild considering how busy everybody gets during this time. And their goal is to provide a forum or space for the HVAC members and for subject matter experts to really dive deep into how workforce really develops. For this committee, it is a little more formal in the sense that we ask HVAC members to either sit on the board themselves or to send a representative in their place on their behalf so that they can catch a phrase of what's going on in those discussions because they're happening so quickly. And as you probably all are aware, things can change in the blink of an eye in a general session. And so we're so lucky to have this representative on the subcommittee and how they do such a good job at connecting with your representative. For this year, for our first year, we reviewed any health workforce-related bill that came out, which was very overwhelming. There's so many, and they range across so many different topics. They range from scope of practice to licensure, education. So for this 2024 general session, the HVAC developed under their HVAC plan prioritized areas that they looked at. So for that, our prioritized areas were behavioral health workforce development and intensive program, health workforce education and pipeline, and then other preceptorship initiative program. This was a bill that came up 2 years ago, which kind of spurred the interest in doing a study, but it did not. Yeah, you go next time. Sorry. Gotta love technology. Perfect. And then just to kind of go through, we just wanted to show kind of the areas and primarily of what we reviewed. Most of our bills, 41% were in the development and incentive programs, so that's very similar to the GME programs that I just did. Or just mentioned, 35% were for health workforce education and pipeline, and 24% were for the behavioral health workforce. We were pretty evenly across all three topics, but this really helped us to hone in our focus and really make sure that we are diving as far deep into these bills as we could. There's always a lot to them. So. And then we just wanted to showcase a few of the bills that we have had an impact on. This is really exciting for us because this is something that we are achieving to and becoming known. First is Senate Bill 192. This is the higher education amendments. There was quite a bit involved in this bill, but essentially within this bill, it allows Talent Ready Utah to create and manage talent advisory boards. And so the HWAC worked with Vic Hockett, the director of Talent Ready Utah, to make sure that the HWAC could have a representative on those health workforce-related talent advisory boards. And that would be the case. So we were very happy about that. And then next was House Bill 387, Physician Workforce Amendments. These were the UMEC programs, so it was very easy to collaborate on these. But some of the programs had asked specifically if they could reapply, and that wasn't in the statutory language previously. So we worked with UMEC and HWAC and Representative Elayson to get that update, along with allowing board-eligible physicians to apply to the forensic psychiatry. We found out after the fact that forensic psychiatrists are only allowed to become board certified every other October. And so the organization wanted to, the University of Utah, the awardee, wanted to make that update so that they could have someone who is board eligible and just waited to take their boards. And then finally, House Bill 58 is the International Licensing Amendment. So this expanded the licensure by endorsement. That's a way that those who have been previously licensed in other states or countries or districts can come here and essentially apply for licenses. And so this is allowing, this bill allowed internationally trained physicians to apply for that licensure reendorsement. And there was some confusion in the bill just about the substantially similar education. And so the HWAC worked with those that were endorsing this bill and working on this bill to further clarify what that would look like so that we are ensuring we have qualified professionals here in Utah. So those were our three biggest bills. We reviewed a lot more, but those were the three we got to collaborate on most this year, and we look forward to collaborating even more as we become more known and as we are an establishment. So that's just a little bit about the HWAC. I'm happy to answer any questions that you guys have. This is my contact info. Please feel free to reach out to me or to anyone on our board. Yes.
So this is all about hiring and promoting education in the workforce. Who's on the other side about getting paid by insurance so that we can hire the new skilled people in our practice? So I'm the only one that has a medical practice. I'm only asking for myself, necessarily.
Yeah, so it's more of like the pay and the cost. That typically comes from the, I think One Health Utah is looking more so at that. We're looking at more so like the licensure and the actual bringing workforce here. I'm happy to ask around and follow up with you if you'd like.
Yeah, I just want to know who's the other side that's actually talking about how these guys get paid when they actually get hired.
Yeah.
I mean, I know how they get paid, right? But actually, I mean, like, the collecting the insurance funds for our patients have moved at all.
Absolutely. I think it's One Health Utah. I believe that's one. I might be getting it wrong, but I can happily follow up with you. Because I know that there's a couple of boards looking at that. Okay.
You know, I think the example of a behavioral health technician, you might talk a little bit about that, about how a new position was developed to kind of fill a gap in the workforce. But that's also an example of where they're bringing in the insurance folks to figure out how to pay more people. So we try to be mindful of those.
Yeah, so as Jerry was mentioning, through Talent Ready Utah, they have been working to establish a is it a licensure or certification?
No, I'm kind of a certified.
Certification for behavioral health tech, which is essentially like a CNA, but for the behavioral health field. And we have been through the HWAC. We have collaborated with Mick Hockett and his team. So Jared and I are part of a team with the National Governors Association who are working to bring that certification to fruition. And through that, we have meetings scheduled next week so we can talk to insurers about how to reimburse and pay these individuals. Here in Utah, we're also talking to those who are going to be employing them and what that will look like as well. And so that's a joint effort between ourselves, Talent Ready Utah, Utah System of Higher Education, and our National Governors Association.
Okay, so what I just heard you say is they're going to have somebody who's going to help in psychiatry, but have a, what's the threshold of training? I mean, a certificate is great for licensure, which means they pass a couple of things or... So, I mean, is this like bachelor's level, master's level, or low? Because anybody can be a CNA. They don't have to have a sure. What's the, do you know what the cutoff is?
I think they're still working on that. This is part of it. I don't know if you are aware of the bill of Officer Jeff Shumway's work through the Office of Professional Licensure Review, who did SB 26. This kind of came through that as well, of just looking at behavioral health doesn't have a lot of extenders like the traditional medicine does. And so I believe it's below a bachelor's level for the behavioral health tech.
And so I think they're doing a pilot right now. I can't remember how many institutions, four maybe. Been funded through the Talent Ready Grant to help develop this program. And I think the first goal of the pilot effort is to tie those in with psychology work.
Okay.
Sometimes you get people who go through bachelor's in psychology and what do I do now? Target or?
Yeah.
Now they, have an opportunity to have this.
Well, but a high degree and a psych certification to go to, because I mean, psych degree theory, psych certificate, but I've got hands-on practice with patients. Yeah. Now you combine that, that'd be wonderful, but if it's like, I can just go get my little certificate in a couple months, start doing psych work, that kind of thing. But I just.
I think it's a 1 year.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Great. You guys are making my job easy. Other questions?
It's good when we ask questions.
Hey, it makes it easy when you know.
Hey, any questions on my own thing?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have no idea. But I'm not.
Very cool. Thank you so much for presenting.
Yes, thank you.
We have your slides, right? They should go out with the minutes and the packet. So thank you so much, Kendall, for coming.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, it's my favorite presentation of the year. No pressure.
Thanks.
But Mark always delivers, so. I'm giving Ben a hard time. He doesn't probably know or remember this, but a couple years ago I heard him present down at Copper Rock. And he did.
Well, Mark's fishing now, so you got me.
So now, that's up to you, but. Just so you know, Ben, this group loves the economic update, so that's all you. I'm going to move.
Yeah, I have this little clicker.
I don't have it. Oh, yeah. And I'm going to move, though, so you can stop it. Oh. So then.
Thanks for having me. In past years, it was Mark Nolde here, impressing and smiling everyone, but he's retired in April, so he's... fly fishing or in Europe or something. So my name is Ben Crabb. I'm the new chief economist with the Department of Workforce Services. I have some slides here going over primarily the labor market characteristics of Utah, some kind of warning signs for the state. It's mostly a positive story, but there's a couple of kind of fissures and areas of concern. And then a little bit of forecast looking forward, primarily from the Federal Reserve, so national level, but it scales down to Utah. Let's see. So Utah's economy continues to grow. Here's our view of job levels for the U.S. on the left, the state of Utah on the right. That's a 20-year time span here, so we're looking at all the way back to the Great Recession period, 2008-2009. You can see that Great Recession was a deep and long recession. It took
the nation 6.5 years to recover job level following the financial meltdown. Likewise, with the state of Utah, it was an even longer session, but it was a faster turnaround, so about 5 years, and we're back to the pre-recession job level. Meanwhile, we can fast forward and look at the 2020 recession, which according to the official tabulators, the recession only lasted 2 months. It was March and April 2020. And so, it was just a cliff of job loss. And so for the nation, it took about 3 years to recover job level. For the state of Utah, we have that. So a year and a half, we're back to the job level we were at. And it looks like that job growth rate, is continuing the pace. We're actually a little bit slower. So if we zoomed in on the slope of that line, it would be a little bit slower job growth. This is an indication. Utah's job growth is red year over year compared to all the other nation. The blue band in the middle there is the middle 30 states. So if you're below the blue band, you're in the worst performing 10. If you're above it, you're in the best performing 10. Pre-recession, you can see Utah was essentially number one, and that's where we were. It was us in Idaho kind of tangling for number one for years. We had about the lowest downturn once the pandemic hit, and among the fastest and promptest recoveries. Since then, we remain close to the peak of job growth, or in the upper echelon of states of job growth. We're at about ranked 10 or so, which this next slide will show. So Nevada, Carolina, Alaska, South Carolina, Alaska are up there at the top. Utah is in red at 2.2% as of the latest numbers of May. Tune in a week and a half, no, a week from tomorrow for the latest job numbers. But anyway, 2.2 for Utah in May and 1.7 for the U.S. So we're still outpacing the nation, but not quite at the top one or two or three states. Zooming in and looking at labor market characteristics, this comes from a survey from the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, called JOLTS, Job Openings, Layoff, and Turnover Survey. I would direct your attention to the openings line, which really took off the pandemic during that, you know, really acute labor shortages, the great reshuffling. Employers were jockeying for whatever employees they could find to fill openings. Inflation took off and the Federal Reserve really started hiking rates in early 2022. And you can see that those rate hikes have worked quite nicely to temper job openings. They're trending downward. They're still historically high. If I had a graph that went farther back in time, it's still at a relatively high level, but it is trending downward, as you can see. Hires, quits, and layoffs aren't doing anything too exciting. Quits were at an elevated level during the great reshuffling, and they're sort of trending down right now. And this shows that quits rate. So quits rate is sort of an indication of worker confidence in the economy. You can quit your job, you have high confidence, you're going to be able to pick up the work, or maybe you have a job already lined up. And you can see pre-recession, actually, Utah had quite a high quit rate. We had a really strong economy. It took a while for it to build back up. And after COVID, it really took off, and it's been trending downward since the Federal Reserve started raising rates in 2022. Again, higher than the U.S. is because the economy has been growing faster, and sort of worker confidence in the U.S. economy is higher than the nation. Again, a look at unemployment rates. Utah, I think my next slide shows we're about, again, ranked 10 or 8 or 10 or so compared to the nation. But this is the display over time. Utah's rate remains well below where the nation is. This dashed line at 4% is where the Federal Reserve foresees the U.S. unemployment rate to end at the end of 2024, which is 6 months away. So historically, it's quite a low rate. One thing to factor in on these unemployment rates is, retirees and people that aren't looking for work are not counted in the unemployment rate. It's a measure of those that are looking for work and can't find it. And so there's demographic changes that are occurring in the country. 2 years ago, I'm sure I looked at Mark's slides from 2 years ago, and he has perhaps you remember his age trees that showed this big baby boomer generation aging through this age tree. and aging out of the workforce. And it bodes poorly for economic growth going forward because now we have fewer workers for retiree or for dependents, essentially. And so we would expect unemployment rates to remain reasonably low for the coming several decades, really. But they remain in historically low territory. They've been inching up for a year or two, but they're still quite low. So I choose not to be too worried about them when they are ticking up. We've already looked at that one. Here's one more measure of labor market tightness. So job openings per unemployed worker. After the pandemic hit and all those openings occurred, the great reshuffling was happening, there was about 3.5 openings per unemployed worker. So it really speaks to an extraordinarily tight labor market, and that's been trending down fairly slowly. We basically looked at about 3 graphs that are telling a similar story about cooling labor market compared to where it was just a year ago. Still, though, historically speaking, it's a good labor market for workers. This graph shows labor force participation rates. So this is how many. You look at the whole population age 16 plus, and you say how many folks are involved in the labor force. That means you're working, or just looking for work. That's labor force participation. There's a couple things I want to point out on this graph. In the 80s, 90s, 2000s, it was quite high, and we are significantly low compared to there. This is the story of the demographic changes that we're seeing in ages. The boomers aging out, and there's fewer workers per, the dependency ratio is increasing, so fewer workers per dependent. So it is down from where it was during the peak of the baby boomers' involvement in the labor force. This dashed line, 68.5%, is our sort of back-of-the-envelope calculation of where we think labor force participation rate would land given sort of historical expectations of these different age groups' labor force participation. After COVID hit, this very thin recession line in 2020, it dipped significantly. This represented about 35,000 people that were in the labor force, and now they're kind of on the sidelines. And it took a little while to kind of induce those folks back into the labor force, but we see labor force participation has since been exceeding essentially our expectation of where it would be in demographic structures. Now, in recent months, that started to trend back towards the 68.5. So perhaps the good times are behind us on this sort of extra bump of labor force participation post-COVID with the big wage gains that we saw the problems were. Big wage gains and lots of jobs. Breaking labor force participation rate down by age, we would expect to see this kind of life cycle trend. Age 65 plus, primarily retirees, very low labor force participation, around 20%. Teens, also relatively low, but above 50%. Utah's got about the highest teen labor force participation rate of any state. So we're fortunate in that regard. And then these three categories, age 25 to 54 is prime age workers. That's the highest rate we have. The younger adults are also quite high. This age 55 to 64 is higher than it was just a few years ago. And breaking it down by age group and looking over time, we can see, you know, I was hoping I could tell more interesting stories out of these graphs, but the one that really pops out is this one, that 55 to 64, higher and higher labor force participation. This might be these folks trying to shore up their retirement finances before going to Mark Knoll and sailing off into the sunset. It might have to do with changes in workforce, remote work and hybrid work and sort of accommodating workers in that regard, allowing these folks to decide to stay in the labor force or enter the labor force at a higher rate. It's about 7 percentage points above where it was in 2020. So if we look back on this slide, it's at about 73% or so. So it was 67, 66%. So it's a big increase in this age group involved in labor force. The teens were looking really stellar here for a little while, but their labor force participation rate has dropped back to where it was about 2020. But again, we had a pretty high teen labor force participation rate. A couple slides here on population trends, of course, that determine labor availability for the state. So This is looking at the whole nation population growth for the decade of the 2010s. And Utah, the numbers are a little small, but Utah's 18.4% population growth, the highest population growth in the country. And you can see there's sort of a regional trend here. The Intermountain West with really high population growth, Texas, and the South, a little bit lower, but quite a few people in the South. But Utah has been a big beneficiary of these population trends looking towards the sunny West, basically. This is a look at components of population change for Utah from the Census Bureau to get a little better understanding of how these things are playing out. There's three colors. Blue is natural increase, births minus deaths. The green is the smallest component, that's international immigration to the state. And then the red is domestic immigration to the state, folks moving in from California or wherever else. Note the trend in the height of the blue bars. This is, again, the age demographics structure story. Relatively declining fertility rates and relatively increasing death rates in aging society, essentially. So the natural increase component of population growth is declining. This is the case in all the states across the country, essentially. And Utah is still growing faster than most in that regard, but it is trending downward. We've been really the beneficiaries of domestic immigration, particularly in the years right after COVID, the rise of remote work and the reshuffling of people's work arrangements. A lot of people decided, I'm out of California, I'm coming to Utah, and we see big immigration in 2021 and 2022. It has really dropped off in the latest numbers from the Census Bureau 2023. Perhaps because of our significantly increased cost of housing here. So rewind 5 years ago, we were kind of in the middle of the pack on state median housing prices, maybe ranked 20 or 25th, something like that. So kind of a relatively affordable place. Now we're the sixth or seventh most expensive housing market in the nation. So that is really stamped out. I'll point out that I put some lines on here. These are alternative population estimates from the Ken Gardner Institute. And they estimate much higher in-migration than what the Census Bureau is bringing in. So I've painted myself into a corner because I can't really explain it all that well. But if these numbers are correct, that still is an indication that our housing prices are likely to continue having upward pressure because of all the in-migration. If the Census Bureau's numbers are a little more correct, then it's an indication that those high numbers are likely deterring in-migrants already. And you can see on the green bars, during the Trump administration, those were super, super small, and with the passing of the pandemic and the change of administration in D.C., that has rebounded a little bit. A few slides on inflation and earnings and affordability are coming up. So inflation has been a big story the last couple of years. Basically, think of it as too many dollars chasing too few goods. So, in the wake of the pandemic, there's a lot of federal stimulus money, tons of federal stimulus money, and supply chains were snarled, so the availability of goods was significantly curtailed, and so we get this historic inflation. The latest numbers, for March 2022 was the peak at about 9% year over year. That's that consumer price index inflation measure that we hear about. I said now here, but as of 8:30 this morning, we got a new number. This should be 3.0%. So the latest numbers from the BLS are encouraging that inflation is moving in the right direction. Trending toward that 2% target that the Federal Reserve has in mind. Breaking inflation down by components, most of them are trending in the right way. Energy really took off after COVID and supply chain snarls combined with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Food inflation was a big deal for quite a while. Other goods inflation was a big deal for a while, but those are hardly a component factoring in now. Now shelter is the largest component of inflation. So the way the CPI measures shelter changes in shelter prices is they look at everybody's what they're paying for rent, and so. So there's a bit of a lag because most people are tied into a year lease. You know, the durable rent is not going to change too much over time. And so there's a bit of a time lag before shelter inflation the measure of shelter inflation reflects kind of new leases that are being signed. But we see that this shelter inflation is sort of a lag effect compared to all items on the CPI. Zooming in to the most relevant data I could get my hands on for our region and for the state of Utah, the BLS also releases this mountain region inflation that's very similar to the national one. You can see it peaked around 10% as opposed to 9% for the nation. So we got higher inflation in the mountain region than the eight intermountain states. Here's the average hourly earnings for Utahns. These are year-over-year measurements, and so you can see that for 2021-2 and the early part of 23, hourly earnings were not keeping up with inflation. Workers were kind of falling behind in that regard. For the latest year or so, it's looking better. Hourly earnings are more than keeping up with inflation. If we plot it as a cumulative change since mid-2020, the story kind of it makes clear why workers are frustrated with their dollars not keeping up with overall inflation for this longer time horizon. Now, hourly earnings, we hear about in graphs like the one I just showed, if you'd like to read the economics articles in the New York Times, et cetera. But another component of this is hours worked. So that this determines total take-home pay, hourly earnings times hours worked. And so we can get a weekly earnings, and you can see that's been falling behind inflation in this cumulative measure, more so than just the hourly metric. Oops. Here's the weekly hours trending downward.
Is that because people only want to work 4 days a week?
Well, I used to work 4 days a week, but now I'm just economist. I think it's employers doing their best to hold on to employees that they have and trying to trim costs by cutting back the hours just a little bit.
I would wonder if because employees at the height of all this and they were bulldozing as employers, they're like, I only want to work 4 days a week.
Well, I'm sure there's some negotiations.
That's got to be them in there, right?
Yeah. So total weekly hours have trended downward in this 4 or 5 year graph. About 3%, that's about an hour a week. If I put a number on here, this would be about 33 hours here as weekly hours down from 34. It doesn't sound like too much, but that's a 3% decline in total take home.
Does that include overtime?
That would include total weekly hours.
Okay. It's just the overtime costs were up a ton because they can't afford to pay overtime.
Sounds weird. The final graph I'll put on this slide is our median listing price for homes in Utah. So you can see these are up 35% over the last four or so years. They've been kind of fluctuating up and down, but more or less holding steady for 2 years or so, which is positive news for the shelter component of those inflation metrics that we were looking at earlier. The other thing to note on this is if you were a homeowner in 2020, you're not really subject to that shelter component of inflation because your mortgage rate's probably unchanged. Meanwhile, you've seen the value of your home really go up, and you feel great about that. And if you have some retirement or other savings and investments in the stock market, the S&P's up 79%, the Dow Jones is up 50% over this time frame. So a little bit of a divergent story between those who own the home and have some investments feeling pretty flush compared to those who don't have those things and are seeing their weekly hours trimmed. And while their hourly earnings have nearly kept up with inflation, their total take-home pay is lagging a little bit farther behind. And so we see things like rising credit card delinquency, little canaries in the coal mine of potential concerns about the durability of our economic expansion going forward. My final couple slides here take forecasts from the Federal Reserve's, the committee that sets interest rates, the FOMC, Federal Open Market Committee, and they meet quarterly and come up with these projections of where they think these three major metrics of economic performance are going to be, real GDP growth, inflation, they like this PCE flavor, personal consumption expenditures, a little different flavor, but pretty similar to the CPI, and then the unemployment rate. And then, of course, it's their job to set interest rates, and so they also forecast where they think those are going to be. And you can see that for the next couple of years, they foresee the unemployment rate holding quite steady. You know, this goes from 4 to 4.1 back to 4. So that's not very exciting, but that's good news that not, they don't foresee it really peaking. They see inflation trending steadily toward their 2% target. That's their job, to get it to 2%. So they almost always put, you know, 3 years out, we're going to be right where we need to be. Real GDP growth they see holding pretty steady at about 2%. And interest rates they foresee being able to make some cuts going forward. These data are from their March meeting. And so at the end of 2023, and right now we're at 5.3% on an interest rate. They foresee it going to 4.6 by the end of the year. Now, there's an update to this. Their June meeting, this was a 5.1, so they were a little less bullish on their ability to make cuts, but that still implies one rate cut by the end of the year, and then a downward trend with significant error bars around it. They foresee being able to make some cuts, probably one cut by the end of this year. With that BLS CPI number, the inflation number that I mentioned earlier, coming in lower than expected, 3%, that's good news for the likelihood of an interest rate cut. Unemployment rate, this is just a look at the same data that we were looking at on that four panel graph earlier, but 4 to 4.1 back to 4. So they're seeing unemployment rates stay pretty low, and inflation rate, they're seeing trend steadily towards their 2% target. For Utah, oh, and we have real GDP growth staying at about 2%. Translating these into Utah numbers, it's basically an expectation of about 2% year-over-year job growth going forward. It's a little lower than our historical average, around 3%, but it's what we've been seeing for the last year or so. Right now, we're at about 2.9% unemployment rate, and I would expect that to remain pretty steady. Maybe it'll pick up a little bit, but it's sort of a steady as she goes, maybe cross your fingers, going forward for the next year or so. And there's what I just said. So the outlook. Non-farm job payrolls in Utah likely to grow about 2% going forward. Unemployment rate likely to stay in low territory. Growth in wages and hourly work likely to be sensitive to Fed decision on interest rates. If they decide to start cutting, employers will feel a little bit more confident and likely to see some increases in wages and hours worked, or at least hours worked. Inflation likely to continue moderating, provided shelter growth doesn't continue to grow. It seems like it's moderating. There's efforts to expand housing stock. I know there's an effort in Utah to expand build a lot of starter homes by a certain date. And I think there's similar programs in other states. And then kind of an outlook on Federal Reserve, likely to have an interest rate cut this year, but time will tell. That's the outlook. That's my contact information. That's what I have.
Questions? Yes. When you say the unemployment rate, your statistics, are they based completely on those that file for unemployment, or do you have some other method that you use to compile that?
The number of filers for claims is one thing that goes into that calculation, but most of it comes from this household survey called the current population survey.
Okay.
And there's a lot of demographic data that come out of that, but they send the BLS sends that out to, they used to send it out to 60,000 households, and they just had to trim their budget, so now they send it out to 55,000 households. Come on, we need more data. But they send it out to a bunch of households, and they say, you know, are you employed? Are you looking for work? And that's how they get the base data on that.
Okay. Other questions? I'm feeling a little more optimistic, just so I know.
Okay.
Not sure that was your goal, but I am. Thank you for that. We have those slides, right? If we can get, that's one presentation that I send out to our upper leadership in my company. They love this presentation. So if we can get that maybe a little quicker than some of the other stuff, that would be great. I know that my C-suite likes to see it. Thank you so much. So good. We'll keep him. I know. I guess too. You're not bad. Thank you so much. Okay. I love that presentation. And honestly, just as we're joking about it, last time Mark was here, it was a little grim. We were all like, not good. So I feel a little better. Stuck around. So with that, we have two more agenda items. We're going to jump into our workforce win. And Amy's going to kick us off with it. Is it a video?
Yes, I love these. Where am I forever?
I get the fun.
You do.
Agenda item.
I love these. All right, I'm just going to give you a little preface of the workforce win that's coming your way right now. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today and talk about not only Beaver County, but the Milford Mining operation that is currently underway. So just for a backstory, back in April of 2023, the property was purchased to get the operation going again. Fast forward to 2024, their hiring manager, Jason, reached out to DWS and Beaver and asked for some help to get some individuals hired. The employment counselors, both Heidi and Linda, that worked there in the office went out and toured the facility before they kind of created a game plan to figure out what would best serve them to get individuals hired. They were looking for upper leadership positions as well as some on-site management. They were looking for those positions first and then hiring the frontline mining positions afterwards. So they went and toured the facility. They held a recruitment there at the Beaver office where the recruiter came in and was able to hire about 10 individuals right off the spot. So coming in unemployed and leaving the office with a high-paying job in Beaver County was a huge win for us. So today, this is going to highlight the operation and the opportunities that we've had to help them. In reaching out to the facility this week, they have currently hired about 70 individuals. Those 10 that we hired right off the bat are still with them. At this point, they have a five-year projection of hiring about 160 individuals. This is going to highlight that. Thank you.
We're a copper mine, so we take rocks like this and turn them into a pure copper. Some iteration of the mine's been in business for decades. Milford Mining purchased the property in April of 2023, and we are just about to start making copper ourselves, so it's an exciting time to be here.
Working with the Milford Mining Company has been actually really awesome. So about 7 months ago, our workforce development specialist contacted me and wanted us to go out and talk with the mine because it was going to start up doing production again. And we wanted to make sure that we could help them.
Problems we're facing right now are really a shortage of candidates. It's hard to find people. It's not a big county. There's not a lot of population here. And the businesses that are here are all competing for the same people.
And Jason was really interested in the services that we offered, and so we talked a little bit about his employment needs, and I discussed our needs of things that we can help you with, which would be on-the-job trainings, employment internships, things like that.
They helped us to get connected to people in this community in a way that we wouldn't have otherwise. So it's been a great relationship to build with them.
I think word of mouth goes a long way, so we made sure that we told other people. We went and hung flyers in our local post office, grocery stores, places where individuals go to get the news for our small town.
And so I went and met with the mine rep and filled out my paperwork, and we went on to interviews, and I got a job offer and accepted.
We hired a control room operator who's fantastic, who's knocking it out of the park right now.
So I spend most of my day in the control room, where we try new processes, turn on different equipment, just testing all the different processes, getting ready to start up and hopefully be making copper soon.
There's a lot that we can offer them. We can have them come in. We can help anybody that they are looking at hiring with interviewing skills, resumes. We can do employment internship opportunities. We can do job fairs, things like that.
Well, I think it's a great place. Great place to work. The schedule, I like the schedule. My family likes the schedule. It affords me a lot more free time at home to spend with my family.
Talk to Workforce Services. I mean, they know more about the kind of the scene, what's happening in this community. They know more about that than most people.
Awesome. You know, if this was able to offset any of the unemployment needs from the Big Farm?
Yeah, I don't have to.
It's like there's probably a little bit of a gap, but probably pretty timely for that county.
Yeah, and having a contact list of those individuals helps with
from the big farm.
Awesome.
Yeah. Those of you that Milford lost their giant employer a couple of years ago, literally out of the blue overnight. So it was pretty devastating to that area of state. So that's awesome. Yay for that. Okay. You ready? Okay. Weston's up. In your packet, you have, I think it's the very back last one. Oh, look. There's a really cool paper in here about the HVAC, which I thought was a really interesting acronym. But don't forget that it's in there. But for right now, open this one while Weston talks to us. Yeah.
So I'm just going to highlight a couple things from it. So I'm pretty sure we all can read. But there's some great things that happened over the last quarter that we wanted to highlight just talk a little bit about what's going on. So the Spanish Fork, Salem Chamber of Commerce, and Payson, Nephi Chamber of Commerce joined forces, and they held a Southern Utah County Job Fair on April 30th at the Advanced Learning Center in Salem, Utah. There were 40 employers there and over 450 job seekers, which is pretty awesome, and over 70 attendees were provided on leveraging search for how to land their next job. Which is a pretty awesome accomplishment that they were able to do that and provide those resources and have our employer customers interact with their job seeker customers and merge those populations together. I don't know if you noticed a lot of our whiteboards as you walked in the buildings today, but you'll see a lot of them say ID logistics with big arrows on them. They are a new company that's come into Utah, and they are looking to hire 400 to 600 individuals. And we've been hosting them on site for about a month and a half now and helping provide them space and facilities to recruit while they continue to build their facilities. They'll help serve Amazon in Utah and contract with them. And so we've been providing space and services to them for on-site recruitment, job referrals, interviewing space, and then even some training space as well. So if you would have come here about 2 weeks ago, you wouldn't have been able to park. So we're glad it's stayed out a little bit for you today. And then just some of the cool stuff that's happening in our employer support. So we do during the for the WARN Act, any large scale layoffs, we have the rapid response team that goes out and provides overview of services of what we provide in COBRA insurance and helps get connected to those people that are impacted by those connected to all of those resources. And then the Milford Mining Expansion, there's a QR code on this document that will link you to that video that Amy was able to share with you guys today. So share that with your employer peers, help get the word out there what we do and help provide these resources to these employers and to our communities and help get these job seekers connected to these opportunities. So use that link and use it well. And then in addition to that, some of our education and community pieces, the Workforce Service representatives attended a recent Wasatch High School Transition Fair that included IEP and 405 plan students, parents, and families, as well as community partners. This is pretty big, and being over the Park City area not too long as well myself, to be able to be attached to that with the Park City and Heber School Districts, to be able to partner with all those community resources and learning resource centers and provide that to the students is a pretty huge accomplishment and a great way to continue to market our services and notice that there are kids out there that are struggling and we can help them and we can get them involved and alternative routes to education and internship opportunities to explore these career fields that are out there. So we also had a statewide veteran job fair. This first one that was just targeted specifically toward veterans that was took place at the University of Utah at the Eccles Tower. Through that, we did a lot of preparation workshops leading up into it where spouses of veterans and veterans themselves could come in and learn about resume writing, how to present themselves in an interview, what to do with a job fair, besides just kind of walk around and collect the goods, you know. You don't walk out with a lot of pens, but you want to walk out with a lot of job leads, and maybe even some job offers. And the cool part about that is a lot of the veterans were actually able to do on-site interviews, and there was a lot of job offers that actually took place on-site that day as well. So a lot of cool things that happened there. They kind of gave you an update early on apprenticeships and everything that's going on there, but there's some specific details that highlight that I'll leave you to peruse. And then for the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation, we had the Workability Career Probation Job Fair. So this took place on April 9th. 32 Utah business professionals were there, and approximately 300 people were in attendance during the event to meet with employers and talk about positions. This also had workshops and resources that were offered to help them be successful as they prepared for that career fair. So great work with your team. You guys have been able to do out there with that. So on your back page, there's a couple of really cool upcoming events that you don't want to miss. Today, we had a statewide virtual job fair. And it's a great opportunity and low investment on your guys' part and your fellow employers out there to register and have their booths online with us and have our job seekers be able to come and meet with your hiring officials face-to-face, virtually face-to-face, but they can kind of talk to each other, learn about the positions, the jobs that they're hiring for. And it's a pretty slick process, and we had really high attendance rates for job seekers and employers of the week as well. January, and some of them were some of our highest that we've seen. So just a great resource to be able to do that and connect and not have to do a lot of travel and not a lot of tripping your stuff and your table costs and stuff to an actual request.
So, do you know how many job seekers you have on those virtual fairs right now? Like average?
Maybe July is probably not the highest one.
July, well, we don't have the statistics from today yet. I know
the last couple, yeah, attendees.
And then how many employers do you have?
4,200.
And all over?
Yeah, they are all over the state. And so that's one of the things that our workforce development specialists do is get employers in the community connected, and then our employment counselors help market it very heavily to the job seekers so that we try to help make sure the supply meets the demand. For the local area, so you guys have cross-matched populations of the booth. So, yeah. Another thing that's coming up is we have the, on August 20th, the USORM Employer Virtual Lunch and Learn Session. So that's another great virtual opportunity to participate in and learn some things about what they're providing and probably some speakers and things like that will highlight. And then in addition to that, we have probably the largest in-person job fair coming up on August 27th, the Utah Valley Job Fair. And it's a great opportunity to get out of the virtual world that we've kind of adapted to and meet some of these job seekers face-to-face. It's usually the highest attended in-person job fair that we have in the state right now. So take note of those things, and then our next virtual job fair opportunity will take place September 12th.
So. And it's in your packet.
I know this is a little special, but I've got Matthew who's on unemployment, and I keep telling him to do the interviews. If he goes to a virtual doctor and he talks to an employer, that counts as one of his appointments, right, that he should have. I think he has to get unemployment. If he talks to three more, does it only count as one because it was on a virtual, does it count as
two? Yeah, so what I did want to do is talk to him, too, about kind of the specific jobs that they're looking for and see if he is interested in any of those, and so he's going to want to tie it back. When he reports it to the job that he actually spoke to them about and is interested in. But yeah, absolutely.
The same thing is a face-to-face career fair. If he hands out maybe more of his resumes or talks or exchanges cards, does that count for four? Like, he's one I got to, like, give him a list so he checks it off and he knows he got it done. I want to make sure I'm coaching him correctly.
Yeah, so some of them may require additional applications. Some of them may not. It depends on the field and kind of what employers are looking for, and so as long as it counted as an official, you know, application or interest to the job is interviewed in the process, Okay. He would be able to count that and mark that as part of
it. Yeah, it has to be more like high. It has to be more than like high.
It has to be an intent to actually like, I am interested in this.
I want to work for you.
It has to be.
Again, lots of coaching has to
not happen. Just, yeah, like, not just it, like, it's not the pen gathering. It's the actual, I'm interested in working for you type part.
Yeah, thank you.
And as long as with that, then yes, it does count. And then also, too, if he's really interested, refer him into one of our employment centers. We'll talk to one of our employment counselors.
Oh, I've heard that.
That process too.
So we have some. On the board.
We have something
that.
In my college. We have some process state. We can really help him out. So.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Nope. So all good. Right.
Thanks for all you guys do. It's good to see y'all.
Those are some big time attendance numbers that those fairs given our low unemployment rate. So that's good.
Everybody thinks it's better on the other side.
They did. That's happened for sure. Okay. Public comment? There's public comment online.
There's one sheet that isn't everyone's
packet. Oh, yeah, there's some cool stuff.
That you might want to take a look at.
This one right here?
Yeah, the Utah Workers with Disabilities Information.
That's sheet 2022.
Take a look at it.
She's pushing her board.
Yeah, I know.
She should. There's some really good stuff in there. Make sure you look at it. Okay, so we have gone through the agenda. I just want to make again, October 3rd, so a little bit of a time change. Please make note of upcoming meetings. Our next three meetings are on there. Those should not be moving. As far as I know, they shouldn't move. Looking at a potential field trip in April at a different location. We'll try and do one a year, like we did at the Training Alliance. So, just watch for some upcoming updates. We'll get the economic development out as soon as we can before the minutes go out. With that, thank you everyone for your time. Hope you have a great summer. We are adjourned until October 3rd, except attend your committee meeting, please, until then. Thank you.
Thank you.